It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 223. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Matt and I debate all the important topics burning in your brains. First, are Carmelo Anthony and Kurt Rambis Jimmer haters and complete morons? Does the men's basketball team have a shot at the NCAA tournament without winning the West Coast Conference tournament? Can Tanner become the guy by having an awesome spring camp? And could Jason Bourne beat up just about anyone? This is the Rise and Shout podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, you are at home this time, correct?
I am at home. At one point, I thought I would not be, but here I am.
Here you are. I am in Oceanside, California. The podcast is so important. I'm doing it during my first vacation with my wife without children since we've had children.
Oh, well, we'll see. We'll see if you ever get another one of these vacations.
Well, you know, maybe never again. But Matt, my wife and I couldn't remember when we did the Wisconsin game. That was a day trip, right? Like, you stayed at our house and then we drove down to Madison and drove back, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So that was a day trip. That was not overnight.
We were like, no, we wouldn't have. It's close enough to our house in Minnesota. So anyway, Matt, we've got our brother, our younger brother, Sam. He thinks you're full of it.
Well, this isn't the first time he's thought that. No. And it's also not the first time he's wrong. Throwing that gauntlet down right now.
He's throwing the gauntlet down. So Sam has an issue with your belief, strong belief, that Jason Bourne would absolutely destroy Bruce Wayne, Batman.
So my question, because I've not had the opportunity to discuss this with our brother, so is it that I believe that Jason Bourne would destroy Batman, so he believes that Jason Bourne would win narrowly, or he believes, or he actually believes that Batman would win?
I would say both, and I'll explain why. The why is because there are different versions. We are mainly talking about the movie version of Jason Bourne, the Matt Damon movie version, right? Uh-huh. Is what we're referencing. Sure. What he's saying is there are different versions of Batman. For example, he says, and I agree with him, Michael Keaton's Batman, Jason Bourne, mops the floor with him. Because you gotta make it even, right? No suit.
Right. Oh, no suit.
No suit. All right. Okay. But if you take the animated series Batman, do you remember the Batman, the animated series?
Mm-hmm.
Like, physically, he matched up with, like, Killer Croc and Bane. Like, punch for punch. He was pretty nasty. And then he says Christian Bale's Batman is close. I think Jason Bourne still wins that one.
Jason Bourne...
But narrowly.
...takes the Christian Bale... And if we have no suit.
No suit.
The training is not, it's just not the same.
Oh my gosh. He was trained by a group called the League of Assassins.
Yeah, who was probably privately funded by the people who trained Jason Bourne. So, I mean, let's just be real about this. Jason Bourne wins. And I believe I will be even more vindicated by the Jason Bourne movie, judging by the previews. I think the Jason Bourne movie is going to prove my point even more.
I think the Christian Bale Batman and Jason Bourne, it's a good fight, Bourne wins, but I think that one's close. He mops the floor. Well, I shouldn't say mops the floor. I think Michael Keaton lasts a round or two with him.
How long are these rounds?
You know, minute and a half, I don't know.
Yeah, I doubt it. Michael Keaton and Val Kilmer, neither of them stand a chance.
No. George Clooney are out. They fall faster than I don't know. Pick your tough woman fighting character, right? Like the Black Widow, right? Like she
the
would
Black
take
Widow
those
the
guys
one
down.
From the hot dog eating contests?
No. The one from the Avengers movies.
Okay, just wanted to be clear.
We got to be clear. So Matt,
who I think also beats Bruce Wayne.
No, those wimpy versions of Bruce Wayne, not the Christian Bale Bruce Wayne.
Probably not. But, I mean, did you see the way she handled those bodyguards in Iron Man 3?
Yeah, and in the one of her best scenes is when she takes out the engine room in Captain America Winter Soldier.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like just like rocking these guys. It was pretty awesome. So anyway, here are some other folks that I want your opinion on versus Jason Bourne, since we both agree he's the golden standard, right?
Yep.
All right. Jason Bourne versus James Bond.
I'm not a big Bond guy, but I'm gonna need to know what version of Bond we're talking about.
The most recent.
I feel like that guy might be able to hang. Like, he's probably in a Batman category, but he still loses.
Okay. What about Pierce Brosnan?
I don't, that's like a Michael Keaton.
Okay. Okay. All right. Fair enough. What about Sir Robert Moore or
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery?
I think Sean Connery, he's got old man strength on his side.
Yeah,
so Sean Connery might do all right.
what about Sean Connery's character from The Rock?
Nope.
No, been in jail too long.
No, he's not a fighter.
No, he's not a fighter. Right. He puts things in people's mouths
Right.
and kills them. Yeah. Ethan Hunt from the Mission Impossible series.
Are there weapons? Are there weapons available in the room?
I don't know. I don't know. That's an excellent question.
Or
I
is it just a
say,
room full of like regular furniture,
I would
which is a weapon if you're Jason Bourne?
let's say a room of regular furniture.
Standard family room.
Well, oh no, let's say it's the
Standard
apartment.
one-bedroom apartment in Europe.
Yes. Standard one-bedroom apartment in Paris.
Standard one-bedroom apartment in Paris. Jason
Jason
Bourne
Bourne.
wins.
All right. What about Daredevil? Now, he's tricky because we've stayed away from superpowered people, right? But
Right.
he
So
does
this.
technically kind of have superpowers with his hearing and his, feel of vibration and different things. But I think that one might be the best one we've got.
Maybe Bourne wins.
You think Bourne wins everything. I think Daredevil may win that. The next one, I think we can say because guns won't be allowed, he beats the Punisher, right?
Right, without guns,
Yeah.
what is the Punisher
Even
without
with
guns?
guns, he beats the Punisher, right?
If they both get guns, yeah.
Yeah. And what if the Punisher gets guns and Jason Bourne doesn't?
Jason Bourne wins, but it's a little closer.
He may have a wound or two. Have you seen the show The Arrow on the WB?
I'm actually not.
Okay, I'm going to say that the Arrow in that show is in the camp of the Christian Bale Batman, close, but Jason Bourne wins.
Okay.
I'm gonna say that. That's McQueen. What's his last first name in the comic books? No, Queen. Oliver Queen is the name of the character. And what about Nightwing? Robin, all grown up, martial arts expert trained by Batman. I don't know.
I think
Bourne.
it's a good fight,
But Bourne wins.
but Bourne wins.
All right. So
nobody beats Bourne.
I don't know
Nobody
if
beats
Sam's going to
Bourne.
be satisfied with your answers.
He's clearly not going to be
What about
satisfied with my
Batman, the
answers.
animated series Batman? I know it's hard. We're comparing a cartoon versus a live action character,
I
but
think the Batman, the animated series Batman against Bourne from the later movies, that's where you have a real fight. Because if you watch, like, Matt Damon gets bigger in the later movies.
Yes, that's true. And in this last one, he looks absolutely massive.
Yeah, he's pretty
And that in
jacked, it
that
looks
in
like, in
that
this last one.
ad when he punches the guy and he goes down after one, that's fantastic. All right, Matt. Well, let's jump into
Oh, and Bourne wins.
Oh, and Bourne wins, of course. Let's jump into CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the
So,
news!
Matt, I don't like Carmelo Anthony. Can I just say that before we get started?
Now, just to be clear, you did not like Carmelo Anthony before Jimmer signed his 10-day contract.
That is correct. I think,
Before there was discussion of a 10-day contract.
yes, I
All
think
right.
Carmelo Anthony is the Stephen Marbury of his generation. Basically, he is a player that puts up great numbers who does not make anyone around them better.
Actually, I think Carmelo prefers not to have anybody around him who's very good.
Yes, because then that they might take his shots or whatever. I thought he was going to be awesome. I actually thought this shows you why I shouldn't be an NBA GM, that you should take Carmelo over LeBron in that draft. Oh yeah, talk about what would have been one of the worst decisions ever.
Swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss, and of course the Cavs have gotten LeBron twice.
Would you have taken Carmelo over LeBron the second time?
Thanks, no. No.
All right, good.
I'm not a moron.
Just checking. By the way, that's the second time in the past 3 weeks you've had to point that out.
You know, we try. So all of that is context for Jimmer signs with the Knicks. Carmelo Anthony calls him Jimmy. And Kurt Rambis is unimpressed.
Hey, Jimmy.
So the New York Post story has basically that Rambis utters the comments, which you know is the kiss of death. Well, this was a management decision.
Well, Jim, it's great. It's glad that Kurt Rambis is unimpressed with Jimmer Fredette, because the entire Knicks fan base and the rest of the NBA is unimpressed with Kurt Rambis.
Well, as a coach, I would say, and as a Celtics fan, I hated Rambis when he played.
So is Kurt Rambis just like, is he just like interim unimpressed, or is he permanently unimpressed?
Here's the thing. You have Carmelo Anthony, who believes he's one of the best players on the planet. Okay.
Yep.
You are 24-34 and 6.5 games out of the playoffs.
Mm.
Mm. Now in the NBA, like, everybody gets in the playoffs who's decent. So, I mean, I'm trying not to be too bitter about this, but the other part is, when Jimmer was big his senior year, lots of NBA players were tweeting and commenting about how much fun it was to watch Jimmer in college. So don't you think Carmelo Anthony's dig was purposeful? Do you think it's possible he didn't actually know Jimmer's first name?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think it is. I think he's being an idiot like he always is.
I think Carmelo doesn't watch a whole lot of basketball other than himself.
Clearly. Yeah, clearly.
You know,
if he watched Stephon Curry, he might realize that, you know, playing as a team can actually, it's a team game, basketball is, on offense especially.
Yeah, but Carmelo's always had that problem. He had that problem at Syracuse.
Yeah, no, because he had Boeheim as a, that is the difference. When he was a freshman at Syracuse, he was better because Boeheim kept him in line, right? You have to have the right coach for an idiot like that. You just do.
You know, I loved Rambis's comment of, well, I'm not going to displace somebody who's been working hard all season.
What does that even mean?
You're 24-34. You better displace somebody.
Right. And that working hard? Like, Jimmer hasn't? Like, you think this D-League guy hasn't been working hard?
Guess what? You're not going to get named head coach because you worked hard.
No. I think that's a prerequisite.
Working hard is important, kids. Okay, everybody needs to do that. But that's, at the end of the day, that's not what wins.
No, that is not what wins. Strategy and talent win. Matt, we will head for our first time today to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney.
And by the way, Sweeney, you cannot be the Sweeney of Facebook.
Well, you know what, though? Like, if he claims it, I mean, who are we to tell Sweeney what he can and can't do?
It's our podcast. We can tell anybody. I'm not going to name him the Sweeney of Facebook and the Sweeney of Twitter.
Sweeney is the Sweeney of Facebook?
Yeah, it just seems like we need somebody else to claim Facebook, to own it. You know, maybe somebody that doesn't even use Twitter.
You know what? But I don't want to displace Sweeney. I mean, he's worked really hard.
I see what you did there.
He
asks, how can we collectively plot Kurt Rambis's untimely demise? All I'm saying, hashtag tweetbag, hashtag let Jimmer play, hashtag he is not an off guard. That comes from Rambis's comments that he is not an NBA point guard. Jimmer isn't, which, by the way, I think is shared by a lot more people than Kurt Rambis, by the way.
I actually could get on board with that. That Jimmer's not an NBA point guard. I might be able to get on board with that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a whole different can of worms. Justin, the easy answer is Kurt Rambis is working on his own demise, so we don't really need to help him.
That is exactly what I was going to say.
So,
it's called karma.
Yes. Well, what it's really called is, similar to Jimmer, his assessment of Jimmer is Rambis doesn't have it, what it takes to be an NBA head coach. Which is funny because there's rumors that the Lakers want to bring him back and replace Byron Scott. Based on what? Like Byron Scott's losing, but he's losing with, you know, a zombie Kobe Bryant and his merry band of men.
The Lakers even trying to pretend that this season is about winning games total joke.
They're not. Yeah,
this is not about. This is the Kobe Bryant farewell tour.
It's gross. It's getting gross.
It's really bad.
No, nobody else. None of the greatest players of all time would have let themselves go.
Nobody's done this. And I can think of five players in the history of the NBA that were better than Kobe Bryant, and none of them got this. This is insane.
More than that. That list is 10 long, but. Yes, this is insane. This is insane. But of course, you and I aren't exactly Lakers fans. So
not exactly.
Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins on Twitter, asks, has there been a more polarizing, captivating BYU athlete than Jimmer? If you're talking about within the fan base, Andre, I wouldn't say polarizing, right? In the fan base, he's Jimmer.
Right, but I think that what he's talking about when he says polarizing is kind of like not just inside the BYU fan base polarizing, like a Max Hall polarizing.
Yeah, but you see, here's the thing. Like, BYU athletes who've had like a national persona are, and I believe this is the entire list, Steve Young, Danny Ainge, Jimmer, and...
Jim McMahon.
Am I missing anybody? I mean, you wouldn't include Chad Lewis. He was an all-pro, but he was in a national, like, you know, kind of a national figure. So it's a very small group. Ainge was also quite polarizing when he played. A lot of people hated him. But it was very different than Jimmer's situation. Ainge was an NBA All-Star, right? And Jimmer, unfortunately, has never reached that level. Young was not polarizing at all, really. Maybe early in his career when people didn't know if this running left-handed QB could actually play. And McMahon, I guess, was polarizing. So I guess it comes down to, is Jimmer a more fascinating, polarized, captivating or polarizing than Ainge or McMahon?
What's been interesting about Jimmer is the hustle and bustle around Twitter for Jimmer and this contract with the Knicks and getting in the game with 2 minutes to go and hitting that 3-point shot.
Yeah,
the crowd in New York chanting that they want Jimmer on the court. I mean, I don't know that we've seen anything quite like this for a BYU athlete.
No.
I mean, there's nothing in this category.
No,
and frankly, crazy. I don't even know what a good. I don't know what, even if you go outside of BYU. I don't know that I see even a good comparison for this. I hear people throw out the name Tim Tebow, but Tim Tebow was starting for an NFL franchise and took him to the playoffs.
No. Let's
right.
Step
so
back.
That
step
comparison, back. I don't think makes any sense.
Step back. Tebow did not take them to the playoffs. He was the quarterback on a team that made the playoffs.
Okay, fine. Okay. Right, but he was a starting quarterback
on a
team that
was
a
starting quarterback.
Playoff.
And how well did that go? I think the Tebow-Jimmer correlation is actually, if Jimmer had ended up not on the Kings, if he had ended up on a team that knew how to use him, I think it would be almost exactly the same, because I think Jimmer would have started for a few years.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying there, but I look at what's happened over the past, what are we in, 5 years now?
Yeah.
How many teams has he been to? And none of these guys can figure out how to use him?
Yeah, I was really hopeful with the Spurs, but it just has not worked out. You know, but the flip side to that is, you're probably right. I don't know that there is a good correlation. I don't know if there is. I mean, he is unique. The fact that here's this guy that just came in from the D-League and people are chanting to see him.
Like, it's crazy.
Nobody, I mean, you know, it is pretty crazy. He is now on this is officially his fourth NBA team. Sacramento, Chicago,
New Orleans, Chicago.
And now New York. Now here's the thing. I'm with what you said about, fifth NBA team. Yeah, you're right. If you're the Knicks, I don't see why you wouldn't give him a shot, run the point, and see what happens.
You're 24 and 34. What do you really have to lose at this point?
if it happens to work, he's 26, he's not even that old yet. If it happens to work for a few games, then you sign him to a contract, and then he becomes trade bait or something. You know what I mean? Like, if nothing else, it'll be like, you know, Jeremy Lin. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what the hey? But the problem is they've got Carmelo, who they have decided to build their franchise around, which was a colossal mistake in the first
place. It's just silly.
Well, they lost out
Carmelo doesn't want a franchise built around him.
They lost out on LeBron, right? So that's what they decided to do, and just like everywhere else, they found out, oh, that actually doesn't work to build your team around Carmelo Anthony. Oh, you know, as Denver found out, I guess. That's amazing to me. He's only played for two teams, and wow, not a lot of playoff victories.
Nope.
Not a lot of playoff victories. Anywho, all right, let's get back to the agenda and get past Jimmer. Also, Cougars in the news. Women's basketball, they lost their first conference game, Matt, in the first conference game of the year against San Diego, and haven't lost since.
They are on fire.
Conference champs, tourney bound, ranked number 22 in the coaches, inexplicably outside of the AP top 25 poll. I'm not sure how that works. But they are rolling. Matt, likely don't have to win the conference tournament to get in to the big dance. They're looking good. They could be a team that makes some noise. We could be looking at a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team if they get the right bracket and play well. This could be fun to watch this year.
I think this is at least an Elite 8 team. If you look at what the BYU women's team has done in other years and how far they've gotten into the tournament, this is a historically good team.
Oh yeah, they're really good.
I'd be surprised to not see them go at least into the Elite 8.
Yeah, and it helps to have Lexi Eaton Reidolch, you know, have that kind of player who could just throw the team on their back for a game if everybody else is struggling.
And just pour in buckets.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome. So we'll keep an eye on that. Men's volleyball, they swept number 15 Cal Baptist on the road. They're, of course, ranked number 2 in the country. They will host, I don't even know, excuse me, what the abbreviation is for, number 12 CSUN. I guess I could look that up. CSUN. What is CSUN, man? California State University, Northridge. The Matadors.
Northridge. Of course.
Of course.
What's their mascot? The Map Makers? What do you say?
Matadors.
Oh, Matador.
The yeah, that's different. Map Makers.
Matador is a lot more fierce.
Though not as unique.
Really, what does a Matador really do? I mean, I've never actually watched bullfighting. I'm really just using a Bugs Bunny cartoon for reference here. But what does a matador really do? Really?
Well, if you're using a Bugs Bunny cartoon for reference, I'm not sure how you could go wrong. I don't know.
I don't think you can go wrong.
So,
not with Bugs Bunny.
So they will likely...
Space Jam.
Likely take down the Matadors. Matadors this weekend at the Smith Fieldhouse. So,
Olé.
So, Matt, men's basketball.
Hey, wait a minute. Every time maybe you do it on like every kill or something.
Yes.
But the crowd should yell Olé.
Oh my gosh. If anybody's there.
The crowd needs to do something around Olé.
Maybe I'll text Jerem and give him that idea.
So that needs to happen.
So anyway, Matt, let's move on to men's basketball. We are now, this is remarkable. We're 23 minutes into this podcast and we haven't talked about football or basketball yet. Well, actually we talked basketball pro, but not college.
There's a lot going on.
Weird games, Matt, against San Diego.
Okay? Oh boy.
Thursday night on the road, barely beat a very bad San Diego team at the Jenny Craig Pavilion, 69-67. And then, in one of the most bizarre games I've ever watched, in my time as a college basketball fan. Matt, at halftime, the score was 39-11. I thought it was like the score, you know, when the University of Tennessee back in their heydays of women basketball, when they would basically, if they weren't playing one of the other top 10 teams, would beat them like this.
Yeah.
That's what it was like, 91-33.
This is just embarrassing.
They got outscored as if 39-11 wasn't bad enough. 52-22 in the second half.
Hey, well, you know what? They doubled their scoring output in the second half. True. That's adjustments.
They made 9 field goals instead of 5.
They got on the chalkboard and really drew some stuff out.
0-for-20 from 3-point land.
You should probably have stopped taking those at around 12.
So the announcer said this, and I heard it from some other articles I read. So they was like, well, they came out on fire in that first half against the Cougars in San Diego. Let's be very frank, okay? They shot 40% in the first half at home, right? The reason BYU didn't almost lost that game was not because of some great San Diego offense. It was because either one way or the other, the San Diego defense / BYU's inability to score was the problem, right?
Yeah. I would lean towards BYU's scoring issues.
Yes. BYU shot 27% in that first half against San Diego in the first game. And this game, of course, I don't think they missed a shot. That's not true. But they shot 57%, 71% in the second half. It was like a layup line.
Did they actually shoot the lights out? Like, did the lights actually go out at some point?
I did not notice that on the broadcast.
I didn't see that, but sometimes you can't tell.
You can't. It's hard. So, Matt, here's the deal for me. This is – those two games are this team, right?
Yes.
Those two games are this team. This is just like a perfect fit for what's happened all year. When we can hit three-pointers, we can destroy bad teams. When we don't, all of a sudden, we might not even beat them.
Live by the three, die by the three, my friend.
12 of 27 in that second game on the three. Emery, of course, continues his hot ways. Not as, 30-point, but a good thing about San Diego in the second game, Matt, was, Jordan Chapman played 22 minutes. I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
He may be needed due to injury and or, foul trouble or something at some point. Between now and the end of the year, I think also Celius back played 24 minutes. That's a good sign for us too. But man, this team is confusing us all. Get out.
Yeah, I don't even know what to do with it. Right.
Yeah, and I'm a little worried about Collinsworth lately. He seems to be, I don't know, just not his normal self. But
is it fatigue?
I don't know. Maybe it's just. Maybe it's just, a frustrating season. Maybe he's battling an injury we don't know about. I don't know. He's been fine. He just hasn't been as good as he was earlier in the season.
And you wonder if maybe he's trying to get the team into more of a rhythm instead of just putting them on his shoulders.
In some ways, the Emery game against San Diego, 17, 9 boards, 5 assists. In some ways, I'm more excited about that game than I am the big scoring games. Because one of the criticisms of Emery so far this year has been he's completely one-dimensional. All he does is score. Well, in that game, and recently, he has been much more involved in other aspects besides taking his own shot, which is great. Which is great. So, Matt, BYU has Gonzaga coming up here. Two more games, Portland on Thursday, and we're recording this Tuesday night, Gonzaga on Saturday. That's the big one. Matt, against Portland, percent chance we have a letdown game against Portland, who already beat us once this year on the road, 81-84.
Oh, 10%.
Yeah, I'm about 10.
I'm not really 10. Worried about it this time around.
Especially not in the Marriott Center.
Right.
especially not in the Merritt Center, where BYU is, I've got the statistics here, at home, we are outscoring our opponents by almost 19 points a game. Now, granted, it just got thrown a little bit off with that San Diego game. But
there was a little bit of an outlier in those statistics. Stretching out a little bit.
A little bit. So, Matt, then let's talk about Gonzaga. Already beat them once on the road. Do we need a repeat? Do you think a victory looks different this time? Or what needs to happen for us to beat the Zags?
No, I think we do exactly what we did before. We just got to do it at home.
Yep.
You know, I honestly, I feel pretty good about the chances of winning this game at home.
I think
you walk into this game very confident. You know, obviously there's some, you know, that you can never take Gonzaga lightly, right?
Right.
But, I feel good about their chances to get this thing done.
I think the nice thing for BYU is this is not a bad matchup for BYU in that the guard play for Gonzaga has not been what it was in the past few years. And those guards just gave us fits the past few years. We had trouble guarding them, Pangos. Heck, Stockton, for heaven's sakes, was like an all-star against us. You know, and this year they don't have quite the same. I mean, obviously it's Wiltshire and Sabonis, right?
Yeah, and that's really who you got to worry about.
And we have enough bigs at this point with Davis, Austin, and Kafusi, and Eights if you need them to throw out there against those guys. I actually think Sabonis is their best player, but
I think Sabonis is better than Wiltshire? But don't you think Wiltshire is going to be the player of the year in WCC?
Yes, I think both of those things can be true because they really love giving that to seniors.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I'll tell you what, I was really impressed with Sabonis in the tournament last year.
Well, and I was when they had their game, did you watch their SMU game a couple weeks ago?
No, I didn't catch it.
Yeah, so Wiltshire looked completely overmatched in that game, and Sabonis looked really good. Sabonis so far this year, by the advanced stats, his PER is actually higher than Wiltshire's. So, I mean, that's one thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So Matt, let's talk about predictions. So predictions for Gonzaga.
I'm going to go ahead and predict that BYU wins this game, and I think we're still in that same range. I think that they need to score more than 80. They need to keep Gonzaga somewhere under 80. I'm looking at an 85-79 victory.
Oh, we're kind of close. I have 79-75 BYU winning. So we both agree that they're going to win their last two games, which puts them at 23 regular season victories going into the tournament. Last year, they had 23 regular season victories going into the tournament. The difference, of course, Matt, is last year they had 4 wins against the top 80, and this year they have only 2 such victories. The problem with now they'll get a third if they can beat Gonzaga, and then maybe a fourth in the tournament if they can beat St. Mary's or Gonzaga again. Though Gonzaga is close to not being a top 40 team, but they'll, of course, still be a top 80 team. So, Matt, the question we have from the Tweetbag is, let's see here. No, it's not from the Tweetbag. I lied.
Take it back.
Yeah, sure you can. Or if only we could edit this. If only there were a way. If BYU gets into the tourney, does BYU get in the tourney if they beat Gonzaga but then lose in the WCC championship game?
They beat so we're saying they went out regular season in the tournament championship game to
against
Gonzaga.
St. Mary's or Gonzaga. No, the answer is no.
They don't.
So here's the thing: the best case scenario for them is what we just said. And then they win the championship game because it will help their seeding in the tournament. They'll probably still have to do a play-in game. Right now, Lunardi on ESPN has Gonzaga in a play-in game, an 11 seed, and St. Mary's is an 11 seed that doesn't have to play their way in. Okay. The big thing here for if you're St. Mary's or Gonzaga is BYU cannot win that tournament.
Right, because then one of you isn't coming.
That is correct.
And maybe both of you. You definitely don't get three in.
No, there's not going to be three.
But you know what? Maybe you get two.
I think you get two. And right now, I think either of them win the conference championship. That just helps their cause as far as seeding goes. Now, granted, they still have games left to play, right? So there is the possibility they play themselves out this week. I don't want to totally discount that. I don't think it's likely, but it's certainly there. If you were the committee and BYU wins, what kind of seed are you going to give them? 12?
Yeah. They're up in that range.
Yeah.
12 play-in. I mean, can you give them a play-in as a winner of a tournament?
Yeah, sure you can.
Yeah, I think that's the space you're looking at.
Yeah, I think you're right. So on Thursday, St. Mary's hosts Santa Clara. They're going to win. Gonzaga is at San Diego. Dangerous place to play. I think they'll win. Then, of course, Saturday night, BYU-Gonzaga, and then St. Mary's is at San Francisco. That's a losable game. San Francisco's not terrible, and St. Mary's has struggled a little bit on the road. So I think St. Mary's, if they lose that game and then don't lose and then don't make the championship game in the scenario we're talking about, they're out. They don't have a lot of great wins. They need to beat BYU and or Gonzaga again to really solidify their case, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Interesting time. Matt, in that same article, they point out, the West Coast Conference is not good this year. Overall.
Nope.
Last year, a conference tournament game for BYU averaged they were ranked about 121st, okay, which isn't great, but is pretty good. This year, it's 179.
Mm.
So it's like playing your average game is not a good one, as opposed to, a borderline top 100 game. Most nights you're looking at just trying to not be one of the worst 150 team night.
Right.
It was tough, and BYU's other problem is their out of conference schedule wasn't great either compared to last few years. That's the difference between 23 wins this year, even if they beat Gonzaga, and 23 wins last year going into the tournament. That's the difference. It's the schedule.
Yeah, it's just a different resume.
It's a very different resume. Matt, let's move on to football here. BYU signs its first signee of the 2019 signing class.
So is this a kid that's going to go on a mission?
I don't know.
Conceivably, this kid, we might not see this kid play until 2021.
I think that is highly likely, yes. And the name of the kid is Tausili Fiatoa out of Orem. So a ninth grader.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I have a hard time getting excited about somebody where, I could have my mortgage paid off before this kid plays.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think it's cool. You get the kid to commit. I think that's great. But as a freshman in high school, if he knows that this is where he wants to go, then that's great.
Great.
I mean, as a freshman in high school, if Lavelle Edwards had come to me and said, hey, are you interested in coming to play for BYU? Well, I would have signed.
Oh, yes, you would have.
You know what I mean?
You would have signed before he even got his sentence out.
As a matter of fact, I might have tried to do that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. You may have tried that at a BYU football game. I'll sign Lavelle.
I don't know that I sent Lavelle Edwards a highlight video after my freshman year.
Did you really send one to BYU?
No, we never sent one.
No. Yeah, I sent mine to Roger Reed. My high school highlight video was only about 45 seconds, so it's really short.
It was a couple different angles of the same play?
Yes. It was a really good play, though.
It was. It was a reverse layup. I know all about it.
Against Cohasset.
Dr. J.S.
Dr. J.S., that's what the newspaper said. Dr. J., if he was a really short white kid who couldn't jump.
And was kind of wiry.
Well, Dr. J. was pretty wiry.
I think you were kind of taking wiry to a new level.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right, so Matt, spring football is not that far away.
Isn't it great?
We've only got a few weeks for that. Percent chance that the spring football game is on BYU TV?
I wish it were 100%.
Okay.
Why can't we just make this happen? Why is there even a question?
Yes, it's got to happen. If you can have attendance, like if fans can come in, it should be on TV.
What else are they showing at that time?
Nothing. That,
not something I'm watching.
It automatically, unless it's a Granite Flats, marathon, it's the number one. There's no way. BYU TV. Put it on. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
Get it done.
So Matt, what are the top storylines? I'm going to walk through some of them, and you tell me how you think this will play out in spring football, okay? Here we go.
All right.
First one, Tanner versus Taysom. Go.
It's a non-issue during spring ball. Taysom's not ready to play.
Ah, I believe that is correct. I don't think it'll be much of a storyline. I mean, people will talk about it. I just don't think we'll have much data. I don't know if that's true. Because Tanner will get to run Ty Detmer's offense, right? So we'll get a chance to see that. Matt.
Then there'll be a lot of conversation around, well, if Taysom were running this offense, I think, you'll get a lot of that.
You get a lot of that. Another question will come, and Andre has it for us, Matt, out of the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
This one was real.
Hutchins is a tweet bag all-star tonight, two for two.
Yeah, he is. If Taysom doesn't play or practice in the spring, which neither of us think he will, does Tanner have the better shot at winning the starting job?
No. I think that if Taysom doesn't play in the spring, in the sense that it'll give him just a little bit more time to be out there physically running the offense, yes. But in the eyes of Ty Detmer, I think he's going to if we're walking into fall practice, I think he's going to keep those guys at an even heat as they start out.
I hear what you're saying. I agree more with your first point than your second. I think it does give him an advantage just because he will be more comfortable with the offense. Any of the newcomers that may be out there in spring, he might be more comfortable with. I don't think it's a big advantage, though. I think in the end, the decision on who the starting quarterback will be made in the fall.
Yep.
So I get that. All right. Another storyline, top storyline. How do you think it will play out? We just graduated our best wide receiver for the last couple of years in Mitch Matthews. Will wide receiver prove over the spring to be a worry or a source of a lot of depth?
I think coming out of spring ball, we're all going to think we've got the best wide receiver core in the country. I think these guys, I think they're going to look good. I think we've got some real talent there. I'm hoping to see a couple guys kind of emerge and look like they may be the leaders in that group, but everybody's going to get a bunch of reps. I think Tanner's going to look pretty sharp. There's going to be some highlights with the receiver. So I think we're going to feel good coming out of spring practice on the receiver level.
All right. Staying on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously Jamal Williams is the incumbent back. It's all indications that he will be back with the Cougars next season, and will be, I assume, the starting running back. Who's the second running back?
Squally Canada, baby.
Squally Canada.
I know people can jump all over. I mean, he got one carry. He was kind of amped up in a game at the end of the year. I don't think that's who Squally Canada is. I think this guy's a baller, and he's going to be the number two guy.
Francis Bernard.
Really?
Yep.
Maybe. I could see that. I could see that. But I just
see the one that you know, the one that you don't know is always seems more attractive, right?
I mean, we don't know Squally Kennedy. He's got this great name, you know. But Bernard, I've seen him. He's good. I think if we do the running game that Ty Detmer wants to install, this kind of power pro running game behind this this powerful big offensive line, I think Bernard is a good fit for that. This is not like me calling out that I think Nate Carter would be part of the big part of the offense. All right, this one I think is a very legit, but we'll see. Squally may be the guy. Squally may be the guy. Moving to the defensive side of the ball, Matt. Is this the year where everyone decides that the defensive backfield is the best part of BYU's defense? Maybe that's probably not true that it's ever, but you know, doesn't happen very often. Are we going to walk out of spring practice saying the defensive backfield is way better than anything else we got going?
No, I don't think we will. I guess I don't think you can have both. I don't think you can come out of spring feeling like your defensive backfield is unstoppable and your receivers are awesome.
That's probably true.
So I think there's a little bit of give and take there. Do I think this defensive backfield is very good? Yeah. Do I think they may end up being one of the best groups that we've had? Perhaps. They may.
I think they already are, but based on their performance last year.
I'm not even sure if we get through the season and feel like that's the strongest part of the defense.
I think we will. I think one of the things that could be a concern, no joke, the flip side of what you just argued, is what if the receivers look bad, but it's not actually as bad as you think it is? You know what I mean? Because Michael Davis is shutting guys down in practice and other things like that. You know, and if Hanneman takes the leap, right? And all of a sudden you've got two guys that can play press coverage on the edge. That might make your wide receivers look worse than when you get in the first game against Arizona. You go, oh, actually, this is a pretty good group. Oh, it'll be interesting. That battle could be the most interesting battle in spring, is the DBs and the wide receivers. Staying on the defensive side of the ball, Matt, we will all feel confident or really nervous about the new defense, especially when we're talking about the front seven after spring practice is through.
We're going to be confident. We're going to feel really good about the front seven on defense.
No, we're not. We're going to feel really good.
We're going to be spring camp national champs.
I think BYU's offense, the new running game, everything after some fits and starts at the beginning of spring practice starts running well. We got a lot of veterans on the O-line, quarterback with experienced backfield. Even though we lost Matthews, there's good wide receiver experience. I think all of a sudden everyone's going to be like, wow, this offense is good, and that front seven looks like a problem. But I don't think it'll be as bad as it looks.
See, I think we have a little bit of work in the running game as far as, you know, if you look at installing a new offense, you got a number one back who's had a year off. I think those types of things are going to help that front seven look a little bit better during spring ball.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, like, new defense, new offense. In reality, we really have no idea what we're going to see, right? I mean,
but I'd say it's going to be awesome to see it.
Yes, it will be. So, Matt, conference expansion keeps rearing its ugly head. Apparently, Boren, the president of Oklahoma, multiple reports have him saying that he wants BYU and he wants expansion to happen. And it looks like the favorites at this point, if you want to even call them that, is BYU and Cincinnati. Matt, has anything changed for you since we talked about this last a couple weeks ago?
Nothing's going to change for me until somebody does something about it.
Yep. Yeah. But
you know,
I
like the stuff that Boren is saying, but you know what? You know what all this talk is to me? Boren.
Yes. You're not hearing a lot of noise out of anybody else in the conference.
Let's get it done.
And what I do think, though, is I think Big 12 expansion is likelier to happen now before all the TV contracts go down than I felt it was 2 months ago.
Are you just thinking that the conferences want to be negotiating from a position of strength?
No, I just think Oklahoma's forcing the issue. If you're the Big 12, if you're Baylor, if you're TCU, and you're sitting there going, huh, Oklahoma seems unhappy with where we're at. Now, do I want to split up the pie with two more teams? I do not. But if I get two more teams, maybe I can renegotiate and press the issue like you said now. But if I'm TCU or Baylor, what happens if Oklahoma decides to leave when those TV contracts are up? You think we're going to get even the money we're making now per year? Probably not, right?
Nope.
So if I'm Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, and others, I start thinking, listen, if this is what Oklahoma wants, in the end, it's going to probably be at least a wash for us financially, if not a benefit to expand. Even if it hurts us a little bit in the short term, it should help us in the long term. The problem is, Matt, I don't see a lot of evidence that these schools are thinking long term. So all of what I just said may be bunk because these teams just think Oklahoma's going to stay no matter what, and let's just wait till the TV contracts are up. Certainly, yeah, the commissioner sounds that way.
Yeah, it's tough to know what to do.
So we've done this many times, Matt. John Brame on Twitter asked this question. We've answered it, but we'll do it again. At Johnny Dangerman on Twitter, he says, will the Mountain West return to being the best non-P5 conference, or will the American be tops for the future? If snubbed by the Big 12, let's say 5 weeks from now, they shock the world and announce that Cincinnati and Central Florida are now part of the Big 12 conference, should BYU turn around and join one of these other conferences?
They should, but they should under no circumstance join the Mountain West Conference.
I would put one caveat on that, okay? Mountain West as it exists today, no. I would not be opposed to them getting together with Boise State and maybe another school or two and trying to form their own conference like they did with the Mountain West oh so many years ago.
Yeah, I can get behind that because that's not the Mountain West.
Yeah.
And it gets you in a conference with Boise State and you get some other things worked out there.
And you try to poach some of the other schools that are sitting out there on the inset, like Mountain West schools like Colorado State, San Diego State, maybe some American schools that are feeling threatened. And you try to create the best P5, non-P5 football conference that you can. Or you just join the American. You get together with Boise, like almost happened not too long ago, where Boise almost joined what was then the Big East, and get that done or something. In the end, though, you can't join the Mountain West. I mean, it's just such a massive step backwards.
Oh, yeah, you can't. You can't.
Yeah.
And is Hare Thompson still there? No.
No. Well, there's no way it happens if Hare Thompson is there. And I also don't mind being in a conference with Utah State, by the way. I didn't mean to exclude them. You know, it's always good to have your little brother around when you play ball.
Oh.
You know, it's always good, right? You're my little brother. I like having you around.
Shots fired.
It's not an insult, is it? Oh, man. You know, I've watched a lot of rivalry basketball games, you know, in the last week because ESPN had that rivalry week and stuff, and Duke and North Carolina. They just need to cancel all of them. Voldemort's right, Matt. There's too much tension in these rivalry games.
It is extremely dangerous.
Yeah. You should only play teams to which there's no history nor any type of other thing that could emotionally charge a game.
You do not want to play emotionally charged.
I'll tell you what, even though this wasn't a great year for Duke, though they've had some moments, that Duke-UNC game was pretty good.
It always is. It always is.
It is because even, I mean, they're usually at least decent. Often they're, you know, both top 15 teams. But it's just like you're in Cameron or you're in Chapel Hill and the student section is rocking. I mean, it's pretty special. That's true. I mean, there are other college basketball rivalries where that's true. But, man, I'm getting excited for March. March is upon us, my friend.
Oh, it's awesome.
A couple weeks away, we'll be talking about who's in and who's out. And hopefully after BYU runs through the West Coast Conference Tournament,
we'll be setting up our brackets.
That's right. Setting up our brackets. Well, Matt, we'll be back next week to preview that West Coast Conference Tournament. We encourage everybody to join the conversation on Facebook. That's facebook.com/riseandshout. We are up now to 60 page likes.
You could be the Sweeney of Facebook unless you are actually Sweeney.
Well, to what you said, you think Sweeney can be the Sweeney of Facebook.
No, I'm just announcing what the rules are. I'm not advocating a position at this point. I'm just announcing what the rule is.
Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. If you don't have Twitter, would you advise someone to get Twitter if they're a sports fan?
I think Twitter is great for sports news and kind of participating in some of that conversation. I do a lot more reading on Twitter than I do actually tweeting. But there's a lot of good stuff on there.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll also have some spring football talk next week. 100% certain of that, Matt. Thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!